Popcorn Drinkers, longtime presences on these airwaves, and a perfect segue into our guest, who might be a stranger here to this studio, but not a stranger to Yellow Springs or to these radio waves emanating from your dial. It's a great pleasure to welcome today Pop Wagner.
Thanks. Good morning. Thank you, Nikki. Nice to be here.
You have been listening to and actually making sound across these airwaves for as long as your brother, who we had on a few weeks back, Bodie Wagner.
Right. We grew up here, and we, as soon as we got guitars, we went over to the original studio over in the Student Union building, and every time we come back, we make a visit to YSO.
What do you think of this?
This is lovely. Crazy? Congratulations. Very wonderful facility you have now.
It is.
Did you up the signal too?
We did.
Good.
From 37,000 to 50,000 watts, and we like to say that's as loud as the law will allow.
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
So we've come a long way. So have you. You and your brother, who it's as we learned from Bodie, were greatly influenced and enriched by the library at the Antioch College.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the music that you first got exposed to there, and certainly the books and the people, even.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And my dad and mom had a collection of the records that included Woody Guthrie, Cisco Houston, Lead Belly, Calypso music, and Spike Jones.
Spectre.
Yeah.
My grandparents had those too.
And then we'd bring stuff home from the library too and augment that. And so our grandfather on our mother's side played banjo and harmonica, and he also played violin and keyboards. I have his violin now. That's
this very one that's
yes.
here in the studio?
Aww. One of the very ones in the studio. I have two here today.
He brought the largest, I thought was the largest violin that I'd ever seen, but instead it's a case that holds two.
Two, yes.
And there's a kind of an interesting thing you do with the tuning, but we'll find out about that later. If mm-hmm. you, dear Pop Wagner, would be so kind as to play us a tune.
I'll play a song that I wrote with a friend of mine that kind of got... It's a kind of an underground hit, as it were. This is a song that Jack Hansen and I wrote and collaborated on. And we were sitting around a campfire late one night on the Olympic Peninsula, gazing up at the stars, and the meteor shower was going on then. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of wonderful. We kind of slipped into a reverie of sorts. Actually, maybe we're just gazing at the sky and couldn't think of anything to say. But after a while, Jack looked across the campfire and said, "Pop, don't you think it's high time someone wrote a Cajun song about French Impressionist painters?" Champs-Élysées, picking out pastels and other kinds of paint. Eddie said to Claude, "I got some rouge, man, and it's really odd, and some indigo from Cairo that makes it hard to use restraint." They continued this intellectual discussion over cafe latte and an English muffin when Andre Darren joined them in their talking beverage, you see. Andre was on his way to London, so Monet winked and he told him, "If you get to Charing Cross, man, paint one of the bridge for me." Monet concerned himself with atmosphere and light. He worked on lots of canvases at the same time, and as it got darker, he just painted on down the line, man. Some stuff that's really out of sight. Some other guys in that league were Rodin, Cezanne, Lautrec, and don't forget Paul Gauguin. Vinnie Van Gogh was way ahead and far above. He had an eye for perspective and an ear for love. Camille Pissarro was older than the rest of the bunch. He was scoping out a brand new style. He was missing the point. So every once in a while, he'd go on up to Montmartre, talk it over with the others over lunch. Monet concerned himself with atmosphere and light. He worked on lots of canvases at the same time, and as it got darker, he just painted on down the line. Man, they did some stuff that's really out. That was a Cajun yell I just did. Some other guys in that league were Rodin, Cézanne, Lautrec, and don't forget Paul Gauguin. Now don't forget Paul Gauguin. The Impressionist Two-Step.
What fun.
Yeah.
And that's fun, and you could play that for kids, and some of that would actually wash over and stick. Some interesting little facts about some Impressionist painters. That's lovely. Did that just flow right out, and that was probably done in an afternoon, or did you have to really go back and
No, I researched
up?
That. I was actually an art major in college and took some art history, and then when I was writing the song, my sister-in-law, Caddy Johansson, sent me a book about the Impressionists, and I read up on that. And then I was over in England once and went to the Tate Gallery, and they're in the room where they have Monet's water lilies on display. I mean, you know, not his actual water lilies, but the big paintings he did of them. They're big canvases that reach the ceiling, and they're beautiful. And in the middle of that room was a pedestal with a reference book on it, and it was open to a part where you could read up on what was going on in his life when he painted that. And I lifted the chorus out. I creatively paraphrased the passage from the reference.
I wonder if whoever wrote that will ever come upon that. Hey, that's my chorus.
Well, what the reference book said was, Monet concerned himself with atmosphere and light, often working on several canvases at the same time, switching from one to the other as the light conditions changed. And I said, Jack, there's our chorus right there.
Right there. It's fabulous. You say that's an Impressionist two-step?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Pop Wagner, who's a Yellow Spring native. Is that true? Were you born? You were born in South Dakota.
I was born in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
I was born in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, where my father was teaching engineering for a time at the university there. We left when I was 6 months old, came back here. Both my parents are from Ohio. Mother was from Cincinnati. My father was from Trotwood, and he went to Antioch.
You got deep roots
here. Deep roots.
There was a time, though, a little later on in your life than when you were pretty influential in guiding the first years of Prairie Home Companion. But before that, you also were influential in starting a music festival up in
Yes, my freshman
Wisconsin.
Year at Northland College. My roommates, they were all upperclassmen, and I moved off campus halfway through my first quarter as a freshman. Campus life wasn't getting along with me, so I moved in off campus, and that was fall of '67 was when we got the word that Woody Guthrie had passed, and so we decided that spring, May 1968, to hold a tribute folk festival, and we got people from around the area to come and play, and it was a remarkable success. And actually, when we were planning it, one of my roommates said, "Hey, just for a joke, let's call it the first annual." It turned out the joke was on us because they just held the 45th annual this May.
And what do you call this festival?
Well, it's called the Ashland Folk Festival.
Mm-hmm.
We called it the first annual Midwest Folk Festival. And then after a while, it became the Ashland Folk Festival.
And it still goes on.
People
still come from far and wide.
Yeah. And I've played several. I didn't play this year, but the 40th anniversary I played, and a couple times since then. And that year we formed a group called the Friends of the Ashland Folk Festival, a bunch of alums that were going to help the students make sure it kept going. It's a nice little festival.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you said instrumental in the Prairie Home, I was I don't know if I was instrumental. I played on it a lot in the early years.
Well, you affected that sound, right?
And for a while I was married to the assistant producer of that show.
Oh, so that's how you got that gig.
Actually, that's how she got the gig, I think. But we're good friends. And,
oh, that's great. No. We're talking with Pop Wagner, who's in town, back to his old stomping grounds here in Yellow Springs, where he cut some of his musical teeth and definitely took that musical chomping across the nation and beyond. It's a great treat to have you in the studio today. You brought a couple of violins. You want to tell me a little bit about you said that one's tuned one way and one's tuned another, and I like the idea that instead of retuning, you just carry two.
Well, the reason is, I mean, you can retune a violin, but the songs I play are, you know, 2 or 3 minutes long.
Right.
And it takes at least 10 or 15 minutes for the changed tunes to settle in on a violin before they stop moving around.
Sure.
So I mean, their violins are different. Some are more... you can retune easier and they set in quicker. But I have, this is my grandfather's violin,
that's
and
beautiful.
It's standard tuning, G, D, A, E.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of old-time fiddlers, especially when they're playing A tunes.
In the key of A.
In the key of A,
yeah.
They will play a violin with the bottom two strings tuned up each a whole step, A, E, A, E.
Well, it's almost just one note shy of a chord, so you're starting
yeah.
with almost like a resonating drone.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
Yeah.
And
why is that? It just facilitates the playing? You can just be more agile, or is that...
You know, in classical music, there's one tuning for the instrument. In folk music and traditional music, there's lots.
Infinite.
Yeah. And same with a banjo. There's all kinds of banjo tunings. And I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
It wasn't my idea, but I kind of like it. Because
so,
you can get some different sounds. I mean, the one thing with this AEAE tuning is in order to get the chord all the way across, you'd have to, with a regular tuned instrument, you'd have to put your index finger across the two lower strings.
Almost like a bar chord.
Yeah, but this way I don't have to.
Yeah. Nice. Would you like to hit us a lick on this magical ADAD?
AE, AE.
AE, AE, thank you. AE, AE. Pop Wagner on Weissen.
Master, compel me. the tune. My soul flew to mansions on high.
There.
So nice. Pop Wagner live on 91.3 WYSO. I thought in the beginning that that tuning gave it a more sort of a mournful sound, but that by the last tune, I didn't think that at all.
Actually, if you hear the title, it might be.
Oh, so maybe it's the song itself.
Well, no, the song is from the Sacred Harp tradition. It's called The Lone Pilgrim. And although I learned it from indirectly from a recording of Doc Watson doing that. And in the Sacred Harp, the narrative is told in the third person. And Doc Watson puts it in the first person.
Hmm.
And I think I like it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I do it.
Speaking of Sacred Harp, it brings another beautiful sort of circle to completion. A gentleman here on campus, who I know by the name of Casey, I think you call him David.
No, I call him
Casey.
I call him anything I want.
And he apparently calls you anything he wants.
That's right.
He's the one who turned me on to Sacred Harp singing several years back. And as it turns out, he's the one that turned the world on to not to, what is your actual
my real
first
name is Gordon Wagner.
You.
And I was and people when I was growing up called me Gordy. And when I was in the Boy Scouts with David Kaysenheiser and several other of my buddies here in town, Prentice Champney, Jerry Womack, leaving a lot out, but
your old running crew,
my old running crew, mm-hmm. and there were two Boy Scout troops in Yellow Springs, and Troop 78. They were their one of their primary concerns was advancement, merit badges.
Oh.
Our primary concern, however, was campouts, and we did so many campouts that we couldn't always find adult supervision for the campouts. And somehow the parents of all of us got the idea that I was the one that was the most responsible. And so they put me in charge of those. And Casey called and said, well, you ought to be Pop Wagner then.
Aww.
And
I love that.
Yeah.
And all these years later, many people. So he preceded you. You headed north before you eventually found your way to Prairie Home Companion. You just had headed up that way anyway, headed for college.
Well, I found the Twin Cities is what I found. I went to Ashland, Wisconsin to go to college for 2 or 3 years, followed David Kaisenheiser up there. And then in the process of running that little folk festival that we started when I was a freshman, I met a lot of people and it's musicians from that region, and most of them seem to be from the Twin Cities. So I visited there a few times, and the last time I visited, I just never left. And that was in 1970, and it became home. And a few years later, Garrison Keillor started his radio show.
And when was that, by the way? I'm not sure I know the year.
I think it was 73 or 4, sometime in there.
And had you known him? How did you make that connection?
Yeah. I knew of him, and friends of mine knew him well. In fact, Bill Hinckley and Judy Larson went before it was a Saturday broadcast, he would do a morning show on the then all classical Minnesota Public Radio. His morning shift was 6 to 9, and he knew his boss didn't wake up until 8 or 8:30. So between 6 and 7, he would play Beach Boys, folk music, stuff
and
like that.
And nobody told on him or anything?
Nobody
or
told on him. And then
or?
Then he started doing it between 6 and 8. And, you know, Woody Guthrie, folk music, all kinds of great blues and stuff. And by the time his boss heard about it and told him to stop, that he had such a fan base that...
Listeners wouldn't let him stop.
So
see, that's a beautiful tale.
Yeah.
So years later, culminating in the Prairie Home Companion. So you were a part of the house band then? Is that the idea?
No, I wasn't. Well, before there was a house band, whoever was on the show was the house band. So in that respect, I was. But the first official house band was Bob Douglas, Adam Granger, Mary Duchesne, and Dick Reese, the first organized Powder Milk Biscuit Band. Before that, anyone who was on the show was a... And I think Bill Hinckley and Judy Larson were the first people that he referred to as the Biscuits.
Aww.
And Bill is gone now. Judy's still with us. And they're great inspiration. They took a canoe trip with Garrison early on, and he recorded their different camps, and they'd sing around the campfire in camp at night, and then he'd broadcast on the radio.
From those recordings?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Isn't public radio something
I love
else?
It, yeah.
Got a lot of freedom and a lot of heart and soul. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Pop Wagner. He's a Yellow Springs native son. We're just going to count the 6 months in Puerto Rico as getting off the landing strip. But you were born and raised in Ohio and certainly have made your home in the Midwest. I want to get to later about you have some particularly notable cowboy skills, but I see that you've picked up your guitar again, and I would love to hear another tune.
I'm going to sing one now that this tells a true story. It's kind of a sad story. This is the story was told to me by my friend D.L. Menard. D.L. Menard is sometimes known as this Cajun Hank Williams.
That's your brother mentioned him when he was here too.
Yeah.
Someone made a mixtape for me many, many years ago, and among these songs, his one, and it was in French, and I don't speak it, and all I could do is do maybe
La Porte en Arrière, the back door.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
It's a great song.
Just like became burned into the psyche of my musical thinking.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me of that
sure
name.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that you're referencing him again. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, he lives in the little town of Erath, Louisiana, not too far from the Bayou Teche. And he had a neighbor there named Cleo Landry. And Cleo had kind of an unusual pet. It wasn't a dog, and it wasn't a cat, and it wasn't a canary. It wasn't even a hamster. It was an alligator. And now alligators, when they hatch, they're reptiles, and they come out of eggs, and they're pretty little. And that is a good size for a pet. But
Later on,
yes. And this is a sad but true tale of Cleo's gator. Once I had an alligator. It was my share sweet pet. I want you all to know, as far as alligators go, he was as pretty as they get. Let me tell you about the gator. He was little and cute. He ate all the flies and mosquitoes on the porch. Man, he was a beaut. Then he started getting too big for the aquarium. My old lady said to me, I think it's pretty plain to see you gotta do something, hon. Built a pond in the garden, put him in there. It ain't too hard to figure, he kept growing bigger, but I didn't care. The alligator's getting too big, your gator's getting too large, getting bigger than a pig, almost as big as a barge. You better do something soon, before it gets too late. Doesn't everybody know once your horses go, it ain't no use to close the gate. Well, that gator kept on growing bigger and bigger and bigger until one day he started eating neighbors' chickens. He started snapping at their dogs. I heard the mailman say one day he had to hide behind a big pile of logs. The neighbors were complaining. My wife hollered, yes, she did. You better get that alligator out of here before he eats the grandkids. The alligator's getting too big. Your gator's getting too large. Getting bigger than a pig. Almost as big as a barge. You better do something soon, before it gets too late. Doesn't everybody know, once your horses go, it ain't no use to close the gate. Now, I told you, this little town of Erath, Louisiana, is not too far from the Bayou Teche. The Bayou Teche is a nice place for alligators to hang out. Unfortunately, it is also the place where the alligator poachers hang out. So I said to my gator, I guess you're plumb out of luck. I put him in some mud on a tarp in the back of my pickup truck. We drove over to Bayou Teche and I turned him loose in that place. Now the next time I see him, it'll probably be somebody's fancy suitcase. The alligator's getting too big. Your gator's getting too large. He's getting bigger than a county fair prize-winning pig. Almost as big as a barge. You better do something soon, before it gets too late. Doesn't everybody know, once your horses go, it ain't no use to close the gate. Doesn't everybody know, once your horses go, it ain't no use to close the gate. Yes, I've always heard them say, once your horses get away, it ain't no use to close the gate. Cleo's Gator.
Bob Wagner live on 91.3 WYSO. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about the pretty complex and multifaceted path of our guest today, you'll want to point your browser to popwagner.com. There's a lot there. You'll see if you go there that your skills are not just musical. You weave songs and you weave other things.
I make mohair cinches. That's a cinch for those of you who are not into horses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. A cinch is what holds the saddle on the back of a horse.
It goes under the belly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a belt.
Right.
And then for that matter, I make belts for people, too, out of mohair. And I also make guitar straps. But the mohair is a really preferred material for cinches because it treats the horse pretty nice.
Oh, I wondered.
Yeah.
I wonder what that is.
It's the softest and the strongest natural fiber.
There's some examples of your work there, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
It's very nicely plotted out. Where do these designs come from? Is this traditional? Is this your own?
Well, the basic diamonds and bars pattern is just old as the hills, mm-hmm. and that's what I learned. I took a class from a fellow named Darren Alexander. He was teaching a class at the Buffalo Bill Center in Cody, Wyoming, about 6 or 7 years ago when I was there for a poetry gathering, cowboy music and poetry gathering in Cody. And I took one class from him and then just kept making them, stayed in touch with Darren. And some of the designs are my own, but a lot of them are from tradition. But the mohair, what happens is it, unlike some other fibers, like cotton would stretch. If you buy a 32-inch cinch made out of cotton, in a short time you'll have a 34-inch cinch.
Plus also shrinkage, I mean, one way or the other, whether they get shorter or longer, either way is not acceptable.
Yeah, well, the only way it would shrink is if you put it in the dryer, and you probably wouldn't want to do that. Someone actually did that with a mohair cinch that a friend of mine made.
Oh, no.
And it was a 30-inch cinch, and it ended up an 18-inch cinch. So that's not a good idea.
You can see some beautiful examples of Pop's work and also some workshops and different outreach. You're in schools a lot.
In fact, I'm teaching a three-day workshop in cinch making in Mountain View, Arkansas, this weekend.
This very weekend?
Yeah, and there's still room if anyone's interested.
Wow.
And there's the phone number to call is not on the tip of my tongue, but it's on my website.
That's popwagner.com. You can find out a lot there. Wow. So a couple do you do that all around the country? Or is
yes.
that the one place? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you travel. And you're in schools a lot.
Right, yeah.
And you're a cowboy. In your
yeah,
own,
I've got
right?
horses. And,
yeah.
I'm not a full-time working cowboy. I've done just enough of that sort of work to appreciate what skill it takes.
Yeah.
And the little bit of calf roping I did was on a horse that really knew what to do, and that was the main reason for my success at it, because the horse knew.
Wow.
Cuz I do trick roping in my show, but it's very different from
real roping
where you catch critters and you got to do it just right. Okay. And I'm talking about the ranch roping, not the competition roping. That's another
a whole difference. Yeah.
It's not as different as trick roping is from ranch roping, but it's a different purpose.
If someone went to your website, would that all be explained?
No. If you want to learn about ranch roping, you better figure out spending a lot of time.
Yeah, I'm sure. We've got Pop Wagner live on Excursions on 91.3 WYSO. And, you know, we normally at this time in the broadcast go to a poem from Garrison Keillor.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do that now and come back?
That'd be fine.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
And you can tell us, as we're listening to his dulcet tones, what it's like to stand on stage and hear him do exactly this. It is 18 minutes before 12 o'clock. We will be back with Pop Wagner after this on 91.3.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 11th of September, 2012. It was on this date, 1941, ground was broken for the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia. In July of that same year, Brigadier General and Engineer Brian B. Somerville had summoned two of his subordinates. He told them to draw up plans for an office building 4 stories tall to cover 4 million square feet and to house 40,000 War Department workers. Gave them the assignment on a Thursday afternoon, said he wanted the plans on his desk by Monday. Plans were there on Monday. Construction began 2 months later. 16 months later, the Pentagon was complete. It was on this date, 1792, the Hope Diamond was stolen. It came from a mine in India. It was originally about 112 carats, but King Louis XIV of France had it recut into a 67-carat heart shape, which he wore on a ribbon around his neck. But during the French Revolution, on this date, 1792, the treasury was looted, the crown jewels were stolen, and the Hope Diamond was lost. It turned up in London 20 years later. A stone which is rumored to be cursed. It is said that the merchant who sold it to Louis XIV had stolen it from a statue of a Hindu idol. He was later torn apart by wild dogs, and subsequent owners have suffered financial ruin and personal tragedies and violent deaths. It now rests in the Smithsonian Institution in Washington. It's the birthday of William Sidney Porter, O. Henry, born Greensboro, North Carolina, 1862. O. Henry, who said, "You can't write a story that's got any life in it by sitting at a writing table and thinking. You've got to get out into the streets, into the crowds, talk with people, and feel the rush and throb of real life. That's the stimulant for a story writer." It's the birthday of D.H. Lawrence, David Herbert Lawrence, born Eastwood, England, 1885, author of Sons and Lovers, Women in Love, Lady Chatterley's Lover. D.H. Lawrence, who wrote, "No form of love is wrong so long as it is love, and you yourself honor what you are doing." And it's the birthday of Jessica Mitford, born in Oxfordshire, England, 1917, one of the six Mitford sisters who grew up in a wealthy right-wing family. Two of the sisters became fascists. Jessica and her sister Nancy became socialists. They traveled in high circles. When they were very young, they met Adolf Hitler and thought about assassinating him and did not, and bitterly regretted it years afterward. Here's a poem for today by Charles Darling, entitled At the County Fair, 1956. For a nickel, a machine called an expression of faith would take your dime and squash it. All tubes and gears and lights, the thing would groan, squeak, fart, smoke, and finally drop a little silver oval in your hands, hot as a pistol, with Jesus' face on one side and the Lord's Prayer on the other. I took my medallion home for Grandma, but she wouldn't keep it because it was Catholic and had trespasses instead of debts and left out the part about the kingdom and the power and the glory. She gave it back, and I went downtown and set it on the railroad track. And after the train went by, I had a piece of silver smooth as glass. And that says something about power and glory, by God. At the County Fair, 1956, poem by Charles Darling from The Saints of Diminished Capacity, published by Second Wind Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites, Reputation.com. Produced by Nick Vetter, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor could be talking to our guest. Keep in touch. Do you keep in touch with Garrison?
Oh, yeah. I was at a party at his house just 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Our guest is Pop Wagner, and he, among other things, was a presence on the early versions, the early years of Prairie Comedy
and
Companion.
And we were on in May with the Woody Guthrie tribute. I'm going to do a Woody Guthrie song before the end of the show.
Yeah.
But
and you have some connections to him that are very worthwhile. You have a cowboy tune you want to play for us. And I want to say, as people are listening to these sounds, that if they've never seen you, if they don't know you, you look very much like my favorite cowboy, Sam Elliott, who Big Lebowski fans will recognize.
Yeah.
It's quite a tickler you've got there.
It's the mustache. And anyway, this is a modern cowboy song. This is called Old-Fashioned Cowboy in a Modern-Day World. I got the idea from this song from helping on a cattle gather in Wisconsin in this really hilly part of the country where the ranch foreman was communicating with his wife back at the ranch house using a cell phone. Now, the incoming signal was pretty strong, so he had this up to his ear when he heard his wife coming in. But to get his message back to his wife, he had to stand tiptoe in the stirrups up as high as he could get. He reached the phone up in the air, as high as it would go, and then he would shout up to the phone.
How bizarre.
And I figured, well, there's a, something needs a song. Gather here last weekend, neighbors come to help us brand, and Jenny brought along her little mini digicam. We got some pictures up on Facebook that'll really make you laugh, and a video on YouTube of us doctoring a calf. I got a cellular smartphone, laptop, fax machine, hay prices, cattle futures on my computer screen. Living in the country with my horses and my girl, I'm an old-fashioned cowboy in a modern-day world. Well, I went into town just the other day. Walking through the grocery aisle, I heard somebody say, "Look at that old-timer. Ain't he just a hoot? He's got that Bluetooth in his ear and manure on his boots. He's got a CB cellular laptop, fax machine, hay prices, cattle futures on that computer screen. Living in the country with my horses and my girl, an old-fashioned cowboy in a modern-day world." I stopped at the post office, my errand's almost done. Wouldn't you just know it, someone started poking fun. I'm trying hard to modernize, but in the past I'm stuck. I got George Jones cranking from that iPod in my truck. I got that CB cellular laptop, fax machine, hay prices, cattle futures on my computer screen. Living in the country with my horses and my girl, an old-fashioned cowboy in a modern-day world. Old-fashioned cowboy in a modern-day world, and I've got a good old friend who's an old-fashioned cowboy in Wyoming. Montana. Little town of Forsyth, Montana. Actually, that's where he gets his mail. He lives on a ranch outside of there, and his name is Wally McCrae, and he wrote a classic cowboy poem. And the poem is set in a couple of cowboys talking about one of the theories of the afterlife. It's called Reincarnation, written by Wally McCrae. What is reincarnation? A cowpoke asked his friend. Well, partner, that's what happens when your life has reached its end. They wash your neck and comb your hair and clean your fingernails and put you in a padded box away from life's travails. The box and you goes in a hole that's been dug in the ground, and reincarnation starts when you've been planted beneath the mound. The clods break down, as does the box and you who is inside, and then you're just beginning on your transformation ride, because grass and stuff will start to grow upon your rendered mound until one day, there on your grave, a lonely flower is found. Well, say a horse should wander by and graze upon the flower that once was you and now has become his vegetative bower. The posy that the horse ate up along with his other feed makes bone and fat and muscle that's essential to the steed. But there is a part that he can't use, and so this passes through. And there it lies upon the ground, this thing that once was you. And say perhaps I wander by and I find this on the ground, and I'm a-thinking and a-wondering about this object that I found, and I think of reincarnation and life and death and such, and I come away concluding, pal, you ain't changed all that much. It's Reincarnation by Wally McCrae. A lot of philosophy in that one.
Philosophication in that. Yes. Really, yes. Great. It's Pop Wagner on 91.3 WYSO, and that was just about delightful. You You didn't meet Woody yourself, but you hung with those that were hanging with him, or at least you were just a hair's breadth of separation.
Got to be pretty good friends with Ramblin' Jack Elliott, and my friend Charlie McGuire was mentored by Lee Hayes, who was in the Weavers, and before that the Almanac Singers that Woody was a part of. And another friend of mine from the Twin Cities, Tony Glover, who used to work with Kerner Ray and Glover and was in New York to visit his friend Dave Ray, and ran into Bob Dylan and John Hammond when they were on their way to go and visit Woody while he's still alive in the hospital.
What and, a historic crossing of vectors that was.
Yeah, and the three of us, Charlie McGuire, Tony Glover, and I, for several years have done a Woody Guthrie tribute concert on Woody's birthday, the 14th of July. And this year, being his 100th anniversary of his birth, we're expanding the tour. We've done, I think a dozen shows so far, and got a whole bunch more.
If you come anywhere near here, you will let us know.
You bet. Yeah. You bet. And there's info on the website about that.
That's popwagner.com. You had a Woody tune you wanted to
sing. Yeah, and I'm going to sing one that is was from his kids' song collection, and it's not heard too often. I like this. I call it the Wild Hog Song. He calls it Jiggy Jiggy Bum Bum. I went out on a sagebrush hill. I thought I'd find me a hog to kill. Heard a pig squeal, up jumped one. I pulled my trigger and I drug him home. Jiggy, jiggy, bum, bum. Hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy, jiggy, bum, bum. Hey, piggy, run. Well, I tied my rope around his feet and swung him up in the mill to bleed. In the middle of the night, the gray wolf come to take his wife and his family some. Took my gun and I run to the hill, standing up under the old windmill. I said, Gray Wolf, if you're coming to steal, well, I'll slit your belly and hang you by the heels. A jiggy jiggy bum bum, hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy jiggy bum bum, hey, piggy, run. Oh, Mr. Ranchman, the Gray Wolf said, my 11 little babies are starving dead. I said, Gray Wolf, I got troubles myself. I got a wife and children, 12. Old Gray Wolf made a big run, made me jump and I dropped my gun. Took that gun and throwed it in the well. Darn that Gray Wolf soul to hell. Old Jiggy Jiggy Bum Bum. Hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy Jiggy Bum Bum. Hey, piggy, run. Ooh, Jiggy Jiggy Bum Bum. Hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy, jiggy, bum, bum. Hey, piggy, run. Well, I tore for the house and I woke my kids and I told my wife what the Gray Wolf did. The old lady hollered and the kids they yelled, so we lit out on the Gray Wolf's trail. Before daylight, we trailed him home in a great big cave where the bats did roam. I sent my wife and children in, and I waited out in the northern wind. First out flew the Gray Wolf's nose, then out come his Sunday clothes, and then out sailed his hair and hide. Then here come my kids and wife. Every boy had a sandwich in his hand, every girl had a slice of Virginia ham. Wife had a ham bone. Slick and long, we slipped and slid the whole road home. A jiggy jiggy bum bum. Hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy jiggy bum bum. Hey, piggy, run. When we got home, we jumped in bed and we pulled the covers up over our head. Laughed at the wolf and we licked that bone. Lordy, this is the last of the wild hog song. Jiggy jiggy bum bum. Hey, piggy, run, run. Jiggy jiggy bum bum.
bum. Hey, Peggy, run. Jiggy, jiggy, bum, bum. Hey, Peggy, run, run. Jiggy, jiggy, bum, bum. Hey, Peggy, run. Hey, Peggy, run.
What do you got, 3D?
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, it's an unusual one. It was what first came out on one of the little 10-inch LPs. And
did you find that in the Antioch University or Antioch
College found library? That at the Telekes house, in the Telekes household. My brother was dating one of the Teleki daughters at the time, and they had a great collection of records, and that was one of them. And it came out again on a CD compilation of a bunch of Woody's kids songs, and I can't remember.
Oh, just absolutely lovely collections coming out, and the great work that Nora's been doing with the unsung songs.
Exactly.
People set those
and
to music.
In fact, I forgot to even mention that, but we set one of those texts to music.
Did you?
And put it on our new CD.
What an honor. Did it feel like a little bit of time travel?
Yep.
What a lovely little slice. That will be NPR News headlines knocking on the door. But I want to say, Pop Wagner, thank you for coming by today.
Thank you, Nikki.
And if you bring Woody Guthrie's spirit near these parts, you make sure and let us know, and we'll
do.
Get the word out. And if you come back, we would love that.
All right.
Thanks for being here. This is 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and we're online at WYSO.org. WYSO is a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. We'll get up to one of these unsung songs of Woody after these NPR News headlines. It's 12:01.